Our apologies for not getting the rain report online over the weekend. Connectivity and modem issues prevented that. Just a reminder, however, before we get started, that RAIN, the 160-meter Gateway Radio Newsletter, and the Amateur Radio Newsline will be sharing booth 473C at the Dayton Hamvention beginning Friday, May 14th through Sunday the 16th in suburban Dayton, Ohio. That's booth 473C at the Hamvention. Drop by and say hello. In the meantime, here's part one of a two-part RAIN report rerun about the lifeline of amateur radio, coax. The playing time will be 13 minutes, 23 seconds. There'll be a 10-second break for station ID after 6:43. This is the RAIN report. I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP. Coax. Most of us have used or will use somewhere along the way that flexible or, in the past, often inflexible cable that goes from your mobile or base radio to an antenna that is not attached to your radio. And a guy who knows a whole lot about coax is Ron Steer, 79ICZ, of Richmond, Indiana. Some of you may remember that I produced a piece for the RAIN Report back in the late 80s on coax with this very same Ron Steer. Ron worked for 37 years for Belden Wire and Cable, in engineering, marketing, and even in quality assurance. Give me a thumbnail sketch of the history of coax. How far back does it go, and how has it evolved in the manufacturing of it?
Oh, coax goes back many, many years when radar was first being developed. The English developed what we know as polyethylene. Polyethylene has a low dielectric constant compared to most plastics, and certainly compared to rubbers. It approaches the closest you can get to air in most compounds. The development at first went unnoticed, but then a couple of engineers working on some radar needed some cable or connections, if you will, at that time, that had good high-frequency carrying capability with minimal loss. That is where the real development started in coaxial cable. For all practical purposes, this would be back in the 40s. The evolution was what was known as the JAN specs, J-A-N. It was only up into late 40s, early 50s, where the mil standards started moving in. And even so, all the way through the 70s and into the early 80s, many cables, even though they were what's called mil-spec cables, were commonly known as JAN specs.
Explain for the uninitiated what mil-spec means.
It's a military standard. It's a universal military standard. Any one of the armed services would be able to procure it under a mil-spec number. You hear RG-8. You can also hear mil-C-17, many different nomenclatures. RG stands for radio guide 8. I can't really remember the specific behind the 8, but there was some madness to the definitions. Most all of the coax for quite a few years was used primarily by the military. Amateurs were still using ladder line and open line. Occasionally there would be amateurs who would use coax, and this probably started in the mid-40s where amateurs started to use some coax. But coax was relatively expensive in comparison to their other options at the time.
How expensive?
It was probably a ratio of 7 or 8 to 1.
Why so expensive?
First of all, it was the process. It's a universal process even today. The difference, of course, is equipment and things of that nature. But still, it's a basic process in which you run a piece of copper wire through a tip. In other words, a guide, if you will. And around that tip is a die with a hole in the center that sets over the tip. That governs the amount of wall thickness of the polyethylene that will be laid out over the copper conductor. From there, it goes through depending upon the process, most processes will take it through what they call a tempered water bath. The water starts out relatively warm, and then as it progresses down through the water tray, it gets cooler. It will be blown dry and taken up on a reel for the next part of its process. One of the key elements behind that, many people don't realize this in their day-to-day use. If you take polyethylene and put it on any type of conductor and quench it immediately, get it down to instant solidity, if you will, you develop stresses in the hydrogen-carbon links so that somewhere along the line, you or I using it, put it up our tower or run it out of our basement up to the vertical or whatever. Let's say the sun starts shining on it and starts warming it up. Well, the polyethylene attempts to move back to its original form. In other words, the trying to get back the carbon-hydrogen links of which they were originally. When that happens, it generally grabs the conductor, if you will, and starts pulling the conductor back too. So if nothing else, you put a big kink in the conductor, and there have been many instances where I've observed where the kink was big enough that it just popped right through the polyethylene and shorted out to the braid, which, you know what that does to the final of your transmitter real quick. Back into the development, it was a combination of some engineers out at Cherry Hill with the telephone company. There were also some work being done again in England in which they were trying to experiment in introducing air into the polyethylene. That's where you hear the terminology foam polyethylene. Now, the reason for that was, again, to further reduce the dielectric constant, making it more closely approach air, which again increases the velocity of propagation. Standard polyethylene, the velocity of propagation is somewhere around 65% of air. It was a major breakthrough when they were able to consistently get up to 70-72% of velocity of propagation with foam polyethylene.
I'm speaking today with Ron Steer, 79ICZ, a 37-year veteran with Belt and Wire and Cable, and we're talking about coax. We'll be right back. This is the Rain Report.
You are listening to the Rain Report from www.rainreport.com.
In the design of your coax, and I don't have my formulas with me or in my brain anymore, but there's a ratio of the center conductor diameter to the outer surface where the braid sets on or your shield. That's how you obtain your characteristic impedance of a cable. So if you can increase your velocity of propagation, you can then also increase the size of your center conductor without changing your characteristic impedance. For instance, if you increase the size of your center conductor, then you have the ability generally to have more power carrying capability as well as lower power loss of your signal. Now, you can go the reverse as well. You can reduce the size of your center conductor, and in doing that, then you reduce your overall diameter so that you can make a smaller cable and have typically the same performance, talking electrically, because you're going to have increased power loss.
Let's assume I have an old piece of coax that I have had up in the air for a few years, and I want to replace the connector on it. When I cut that connector off, what will I see as a cross-section of that coax, starting with a center conductor?
You should see a round conductor, could be solid or stranded. Then you will see a layer of polyethylene, either solid or foam. If you look into a drinking glass of water and have the conductor sitting right in the center, that water would be the same as your polyethylene. Then the drinking glass itself would be a braid shield. In today's constructions, you will see a foil on top of that braid. Some instances, you will see the foil on the polyethylene and then the braid over it.
What's the advantage of one over the other?
The whole purpose of the shield is to contain, if you will, the RF, also to preclude RF coming into it in terms of extraneous interference. So there are different degrees of braid coverage, and you'll even find some coaxial cables with double braids on them, again, trying to reduce the amount of RFI, both going out of the coax as well as coming in. The foil shield has the best radiation protection in that if you have metal-to-metal contact on that foil with a lap, it's the same thing as putting the wire inside a piece of conduit. It's where you have much greater protection. The ultimate protection, or the best, would be to have a cast iron, high ferrous iron as your shield. Obviously, that's not very flexible, and so that's not used. I've even seen experiments using what they call liquid metal, in which they pour it out and cut it into ribbons as they pour it out of iron and iron steel alloys, and then braid the cables with that. That stuff is treacherous. It'll cut you up like a razor blade. So it's not become something that's routinely used in any way, shape, or form.
Back in the 70s, there was a cable that became very popular called RG8R. So that was a smaller cable. The trade-off, however, was it was more lossy, albeit more flexible.
Well, there are some claims at that time that the losses were comparable. But if I recall correctly, around 50 megahertz, there was about a 2 dB difference at 50 megahertz. ARRL handbook has a chart with, there's probably 20 cables on the thing showing the loss factors by frequency.
Is RG8X still made today under a different name?
Well, I see all types of advertisements that I make the assumption, I know what the word assume does, they're just versions of RG8X. Some being stranded, some being solid conductor. Again, the variation that takes place and the major advancement that's taken place in the last 10 to 15 years is that they've been able to get the foaming up to 78, 85, 88% for the velocity of propagation. At the same time, maintaining a cell structure so that the conductor won't push through and break through the foam and short against the braid. And that's the reason they call it RG8X, because it is not a standard RG8 cable. It's essentially 50 ohm or 52 ohm at best, NOM I should say. Then the dimensions will vary depending upon the conductor and the degree of foaming on it. That is probably the major breakthrough, the ability to get more air introduced into the polyethylene while still giving it an adequate physical structure that is not going to be crushed. It'll still crush relatively easy compared to a solid polyethylene, but if you step on it in your normal walking, you probably will not severely damage it. But if you take and roll over it with your car, that would be probably more than enough to take and crush it, put a significant impedance discontinuity, if not shorting it out. But some military applications have used it.
Hap Holly and Ron Steer, W9ICZ, will return next week to conclude their discussion about amateur radio's lifeline, coax. The Rain Report is copyright 2003 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.